Hello and welcome to the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. My name is Ash, and I'm joined with three members of my firefighting family. We got Todd.
Hello.
We have Rob.
Hey there.
And we have Scott.
Hi.
And tonight we're going to do a little bit of in the news, and we'll probably ramble off from there for the next hour or so. But starting locally, semi-local, actually down in Vancouver, which is 4-ish hours away from here, we had a fire at a restaurant. It was a seafood restaurant. Fire broke out on a balcony or a deck. Who wants to take
a minute on that? No, I'm off it. fire broke out on a deck somewhere.
Yeah, it sounds like it was the a large seafood restaurant down in Vancouver, down towards the Chinatown area, and it was during the dinner rush hour, so the restaurant was full, very popular restaurant, and the back deck area, it's more of a storage deck, not like a seating area, so in some of the images, there's lots of barrels and supplies and just stash spots, right? Like picture, you know, any city stash area of a business, you know, you're going to have lots of extra grease, garbage, cooking barrels. I'm assuming that was probably
the catalyst
of the fire, because it looked like it was pretty rockin' fire. Mm-hmm. And it was a covered deck as well. And it sounded like they had it fairly contained. It took a little bit. They said, I think they were on scene for an hour and a half, to actually contain the fire to just the back deck area. And then the other big issue was just evacuating everybody as well, because I'm sure there's some smoking issues inside and pure panic, the media stated.
Yeah, and just from like the quick look that I was doing there, it wasn't like it was a new build building. Like in that area, they're not like whatever the word is.
Lots of pet trees.
Huh?
Lots of pet trees in that area.
Oh, for sure it would be.
Yeah.
yeah, older buildings, I'm sure older code when they were built. So, you know, with all that being said, I'm not sure what egress was like. You throw that panic in there with a rocket fire on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a pretty good challenge early on, right?
And you definitely mentioned like egress and stuff and access. Like in that area of the city, the alleyways are very tight and confined. There's still all the dumpsters sit out in the alleyways, and the wires, like, the majority of the overhead wires are running through those alleyways and cross border sidewalks. So you start thinking about second story, well, ladder up, truck applications, things like that, and other associated hazards. You know, when you start talking about strategy and tactics stuff, like that, it definitely gets challenging.
Yeah, that whole general area in the, because like I said, that'd be close to downtown east side or in the downtown east side.
Yeah.
So downtown east side is in Canada, it's what is it, the poorest area code again.
That's what they call it.
So lots of encampments and things like that. Actually, the city of Vancouver just to clean a bunch of kind of camps out on the street because the fire department needed to, because they attended like 3,000 calls for service. Some fires inside tents and things like that, which extended to buildings. There's multiple videos of that. This wasn't one of those incidents, but this is kind of similar structures. Mm-hmm. And you know, just that whole downtown area right now is kind of a hotbed for fires and just the amount of people down there that could become trapped.
Yeah.
You were talking about mass evacuation in that as well. So there's another challenge with apparatus and people and
head counts
and everything like that.
Yeah, getting them out of the restaurant and then where they're going to marshal to, right? And try and accountability. And yeah, I'm sure. If I was in the restaurant, I would have just peaced out.
Is there any indication how big did the fire get to? Did they contain it to just one part of the structure?
It sounds like it was contained to just the exterior deck.
Yeah,
it was a covered deck as well, and pallets of stuff stacked up.
Yeah, I think I'm sure there was some like smoke issues and stuff like that. So, yeah, again, like trying to, you know, evac everybody, anybody that may have had some smoke inhalation or anything, you know, access, egress, those are the kind of things that pose the largest challenges there. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, I think we should chat about what's going on down, like down where Scott was saying. So however many calls for service for fire alone, NBC EHS is down there like crazy. So there's this encampment that's taken over. Why is my brain drawing a blank.
A lot of the sidewalks and parks.
What street is that?
Hastings.
Yeah. So Hastings Street, and it's like tent city everywhere. Mm-hmm. People were erecting like makeshift buildings, like lean-tos against buildings, kind of right in the entryway to some businesses. Businesses had to shut down, like they actually couldn't even run business because it had been extending further and further from kind of where they always were. Like this isn't a new problem for that area of town, but it's just been growing and growing, and it's really turned into quite the encampment. Mm-hmm. And like they were down there with city trucks, dump trucks. They definitely gave these people fair warning that it was coming. And it is a challenge, like reading some of the articles and listening to some of the people's, statements. There was a gentleman there. It was him. He had a dog. He lost his job. He was living somewhere, like he had a place to stay, and he was in that area. And it was one of those single room dwellings, right? And a fire broke out there. It was a very old building. Obviously for somebody who's down on their luck, like that's kind of the last ditch effort of somewhere to stay. And then they all got kicked out of that. So he's like, where am I going to go? Mm-hmm. So he was forced to the streets. Like you definitely, your heart goes out to these guys, but I mean, sadly, at that point, now they're camped out in front of other people that are trying to do business. And I mean, they've been there for, generations, basically, because this is a very old part of town again. What do you do, though? Like, so you boot them out of there. They're just going to disperse elsewhere.
Well, and it's challenging, too. Like, just the life safety aspect that the Park Service and the city is trying to approach certain things. Like, a lot of the deaths in the colder season or any season are in the encampments as well.
Sure.
There'll be fires because it's cold, so they have multiple propane tanks and other heating sources, and we do respond to a lot of deaths down there.
Yeah.
And again, it was in the news just a couple weeks ago. There's before they cleaned that whole section out, there's a massive fire on the sidewalk of all the encampments, and there's a big overhang, and it extended into the structures of this building. And you can see the video, the first truck pulls up, they start getting a line out, another officer goes running in and he's pulling this huge propane bottle that's pissing propane out and chucks it in the street. And like there's fucking hazards everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's challenging. Like everybody feels for the situation, but it can also be very unsafe.
Yeah, I think I know somebody said that. I think the fire chief is actually who stemmed this whole process. Thoughts go out to the people that have been put in this place. But when it's all of these calls for service and their members are like, they're being put in the face of danger, like every time that they respond there. And like the other sad reality that goes along with that is all that drug use and the paraphernalia that's there as well. Mm-hmm. So like when there is a fire, like what else is in there? What else are they, going to be coming across? So overall, it's a massive danger to anybody that's going to be responding. I'm sure RCMP and city police, I guess, would be there.
BP, yeah.
They'll have all of their own challenges as well. But yeah,
so the Vancouver Fire Service said it saw a 30% decline in fires in downtown Eastside since April 5th.
Yeah,
since so it's now what
cleaned it out. Yeah,
this is April 6th. That's like 10 days.
Yeah,
30% drop, and they've 27 less overdose calls this week.
Yeah, and it's back to the safety stuff too with it, like. When you're responding for these medical incidents, whatever it may be, in the encampment areas, access and egress is extremely difficult. And then the amount of weapons, because the mental health and people, they need to feel safe, so they carry weapons. And we're finding all sorts of things down there. Our crews are coming across stuff. We're pulling weapons off of patients. So it's very challenging.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, like, you kind of hit on it there with the fire safety there. Having seen that one video of the tent going up with the overhang, it's surprising, especially with our cold winter that we've had this past year, that there haven't been more fires, deaths because of that. Because obviously people are using propane heating sources or whatever inside these tents that become flammable because they don't have proper ventilation and the materials are flammable. It's just surprising there hasn't been more structure fires and personal death, loss of life because of those fires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not sure what they have down there for, the quote warming centers. Like we have those here But when you're looking at the sheer number, I mean, we open up, there's a couple of churches here that actually do it. They'll open up and they can, you know, they have small meals and just, you know, somewhere to go when it's like very, very cold. And like we get those couple of weeks, and this year we actually had a pretty long snap of pretty, you know, chilly winter. So there was a couple locations that opened their doors here locally in Oliver. I know in Penticton there was even like a bus that was driving around that you could get in there and just get warm to you know, try to minimize that kind of a deal, Rob, where just from the sheer cold, where they're, you know, doing these makeshift fires and, you know, warming by if it's fuel or if it's whatever. I mean, they might actually start burning garbage. Like, sadly, we had a young man that was in a bit of a way. There was some mental health going on there as well. And he was wet and cold and went inside of the vestibule at the bank and started to light shit on fire just to dry himself off. Like, he's hanging his drenched clothes and he's lighting hand sanitizer and the carpet on fire just to try to warm up. And I mean,
pure survival mode.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like, health is way down the line when it comes to something like that. Like, he wasn't thinking clearly, period. But I mean, this is what's happening. So that could have been a massive problem.
Yeah.
And now he's stuck inside of this bank that could be on fire, and now we have to go and respond to that. I mean, you know, we are sheltered. I think in smaller communities, we don't see stuff like that, like the mass camps. Once you start going north, like, you know, I traveled to Kelowna a couple of times over the course of the winter. You're seeing tent city everywhere there. Like, it's getting bigger and bigger. It's definitely a problem.
Yeah, and part of that too is like there is a fair amount of shelters and stuff, but a lot of things, like, people, they don't feel safe in the shelters,
right,
as well. And then there's other health issues and bed bugs and crap. So people, like, when I work down there, many people we dealt with were like, yeah, there's no fucking way I'm going into that shelter because I'm going to get bed bugs, my stuff's going to get stolen, I'm going to lose all my possessions. So that's why they choose to be out. Not all of them, but some, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So the shelters are, you got to be sober.
You got to be sober as well.
Yeah.
Drug-free. And obviously, if you have addiction issues, it's hard to be sober when you're...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they have strict rules. They got to be in by 10 or 11 or whatever times are.
So that was a fire on a deck.
And then we went sideways. And
then we turned it.
Same area code.
Yeah.
So that was kind of local here. On that note, on the fire note, a little bit larger scale.
Not anywhere near us.
And not anywhere near us, actually down in Texas. There was a fire in a cattle ranch or a dairy farm. So I know you have some info jotted down about that one.
Yeah, so down in South Fork, there's a dairy farm in Texas, West Texas. So 18,000 cattle, dairy cattle, lost their lives in an explosion.
It's big in Texas.
Very big. So we were talking, you know, prior to recording, about, okay, the size of this structure that exploded. So they figured it was an overheated piece of farm equipment with a combination of the methane fuel buildup and that what ignited the whole thing. And when you think of a large complex of a fire, you don't picture the entire thing blowing up at once. You think of one area and the fire spreading.
Yeah.
But this one sounded like the whole goddamn thing went up.
Yeah.
So 18,000 cows is that basically the footprint of 26 football fields.
So that was inside the barn? The barn is 26 football fields.
That's huge, yeah.
Yeah, massive. So a lot of the video and the photos coming out of it was just like they're driving down the access road and just billowing gray smoke coming out of everything.
Right.
It was massive, massive.
It's hard to see those videos and put that, like, that size of a facility into scale for my brain. Like, I feel like driving from, like, here to you. And, like, it's just still blowing up as you're driving past it. Like, it's huge, right? And luckily, there was only one worker, it sounds like, that was on scene and in the building at the time.
Which doesn't make any sense. When it's 26.
Well, they said they successfully evacuated uninjured, like,
so one,
40 to 50 people.
Okay, yeah,
but and only one person was on scene that was trapped and injured. Yeah, so there's other workers. Unfortunately, only one person was on scene.
For a 26 football field.
That was in like the initial blast area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That was unable to self-rescue. At the time when we were just reading, it sounds like they're still, at the time of the news article, they were still in critical.
Yeah.
They were obviously rushed to hospital. And, hoping for a recovery there. But
I saw some video of that, and it looks like it's very rural. Like out in the middle of nowhere, almost. So what do you do?
Because it's pretty big.
What do you do though? Like you just let everything burn? Like you're gonna have to shuttle in water because it doesn't look like there's a water source nearby. Mm-hmm. So is it just a?
Well, that looks like a type one.
There's water somewhere from all this calcium water.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, pressurized for other firefighters.
Yeah.
I wish we could have found an article that told us exactly how many like engines and tenders and things are actually on scene, because I'm sure there's a crap load of them. no pun intended there, Ash.
With the shit ton.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a shit show in the start.
Yeah.
But
even with that, like responding to that, is there specific hazards other than like building collapse and or stampeding cattle that may have survived? What other hazards, like what is in there that's
you would have smelled the steaks coming?
The steaks couldn't be higher. Oh man,
oh god.
Well, this is our last
we're episode. Sorry, I really send your complaints to Rob at
yeah we're always professional until Rob comes.
Yeah, sorry.
Absolutely.
It's a real impact.
It looks like it's a metal building.
Yeah.
So you've got the collapse factor there. What chemicals? Like, do they have chemicals on site for something like that?
I don't know.
Natural gas.
I mean, depending on what they do for.
The byproduct, obviously, right?
Yeah.
That was.
But you got to think. So there's going to be equipment. So there's going to be fuel storage.
Yeah.
With the farmlands, outlying areas, there's going to be fertilizer storage. Mm-hmm. So that's a hazard. And access to egress. I know a lot of the big dairy farms, they have underground pits, right?
Yeah.
Where they push all the shit in the manure and then they pump it out after and put it on fields. So there could be other entrapment issues. I'm sure at some point, just like any other large complex, that community probably has some sort of a basic pre-plan of something. But when it all kicks off at once, that changes your tactics a little bit. And then throwing in the mix, well, hey, there's still one person trapped.
Sure.
So now the guys are tasked with doing a rescue and finding this person, treating them, and then still suppressing a 26 football field sized fire.
Well, it sounds like it's not something that happens at a facility like that all that often.
Mm-hmm.
Like you hear of an explosion like that, and it's usually grain silos and facilities like that.
Yeah, in the States, fertilizer right?
That explode plants massively like that. So,
yeah, they're calling it. It's kind of the largest cattle killing event ever in history down there so far in one large event, because they have floods and stuff that are categorized for that wildfire.
Sure. Yeah. Just looking at this article on how they're going to figure out how to dispose of that many carcasses.
Yeah.
You can't, like, it's not like they're edible.
Right.
No.
Because, but there's some things they have to keep in mind of. They have to like make sure they're not in a floodplain area. Meant to be buried at least 50 feet from any nearest public water well, which when you're dealing with 18,000 animals, it's pretty.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a lot of area. There's an expert on cattle disposal.
Well, I'm sure. Yeah,
how do you get that job?
I'm sure in like ranch land, right? Like,
yeah,
if there's some sort of disease or whatever that comes through, right? They would sadly have to call off all of those cattle.
Mm.
So it's not unheard of.
Actually, he said this fellow here, he was hired to dispose of the cows during Hurricane Ike 2018.
There you go. Yeah.
That almost sounds like if they're a disease too, like burning them off would be the best solution, because, you know, in our area with orchards and vineyards,
yeah,
you burn off all the diseased trees because that's going to kill whatever it is.
I don't know if this is a full thing. I'm sure there's cattle ranchers that know, but like in the slaughter industry, they have these big, massive incinerator things. I don't know what they're called, but basically, you can put
leftover organics or whatever, and it'll rotate and burn everything off, mm-hmm. and then all it spits out at the end is the sawdust byproduct, organics and bones.
Yeah,
And then it has to sit for a certain amount of years before it can be used for fertilizer and stuff.
Right.
So I don't know if that could is a thing as well. I'm sure. But, yeah, it definitely doesn't smell nice.
No.
But, yeah. So you think, you know, strategy wise, where are you going to start? You know, the whole alpha side is a little different.
Size of town.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hats off to all the departments that were involved for that, because mm-hmm. That would have been very challenging, I'm sure. And then, like you said, Rob, just the water supply aspect of it as well.
It was a volunteer fire department.
Was yeah. Initially, yeah.
All the mutual aid.
Let's try to see what mm-hmm. talks about that much mutual aid.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott's reading. Speaking of mutual aid, Todd, mm-hmm. why don't you tell us about your call the other day?
Yeah, in full detail, Todd. I can't find this.
In full detail, well, so a typical natural gas leak. Oh yeah, okay, we'll respond and sit there and babysit for a little while and do our isolation zone, etc. Right, as we do, we get there. It's substantial leak. We actually had to evacuate a couple of houses, then another subdivision. We had to kind of shelter in place. We had our perimeter set up, waiting for the gas experts to come in. Yeah, it's going to be 4 or 5 hours before we can get our machine down here to do the next job. Okay,
because there's a main.
There's a main, yeah. So then we have the 3-inch steel main that we're waiting for the welder to come. 4 hours turns into 6 hours. Welder shows up, starts doing his thing. Welder breaks down. So we had to start calling around. We got the green light from them to start calling any welder that we know in town to supply a unit, and then their welder had to finish.
Yeah.
So during this, now we're approaching 8 hours of sitting there. It's very late at night. So I make the joke, well, I'm going to text the boys and say, hey, mutual aid call coming in. So I text on our chat group, yeah, mutual aid call coming in. Send.
Start typing away. It wasn't like 10 o'clock. This was like midnight.
It was late.
We can recap it.
You probably wouldn't want to read my response. Yeah,
So then in fairness, I did start typing immediately afterwards, you know, with the kind of the punchline of it, like, nope, Fortis gas on scene. Yeah, report there to the staging
point. You may have forgot to send then, because I think it was a good minute or two later, because I had my pants on.
So Scott starts mobilizing to come down to the hall, and then he reads my update and starts swearing at me.
Well, because I was a duty officer, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to rip down and figure out what we need, what's going on.
So then he sees it's just a joke. However, Ash, being a kind, loving husband and father, decided not to wake up the family if the pager was off. So he bails out of the house immediately, jumps into his truck, and starts coming down to the hall. Mm-hmm. Doesn't see the text until well afterwards.
I'm sure there's nothing about getting in the first truck to get to the mutual aid call.
Hey, but it was a good wake up call because Ash then thought somebody was
breaking our training ground,
mm-hmm. sneaking through our training ground. So.
You looked up.
So I did honestly feel bad for a little bit.
Yeah, laughing his ass off. So yeah, so it was more than a minute or two difference from the first text of it to the next. Yeah, and it was like right afterwards. But yeah, so like my phone I have on silent mode, like sleep mode. Anything after I think 9:45, because all of our things started to beep. So unless I'm in my phone, I won't see the notification. The only thing that comes through is the text from the wife, or I'm responding. So I see the text, mutual aid call incoming. I'm like, shit, yeah. So I fly out of bed, rip on down here. And like, I'm like, man, like, where's the call? Like, I'm going to be like super first in the fire hall, right? Open it back up. You.
There's some choice words being texted at me.
Yeah. So once that got sent out, there's been some shit rat activity in town. So I'm like, I'm going to go drive by my work and just put eyes on it. Just if I'm up in town, I might as well. And I'm going to let things calm down at the house because we just got a new puppy. And if the dog can, like, fall back asleep, I can then sneak back inside. So I'm going to waste a few minutes and stew over my love for Todd. So I drive past my work, which then puts us kind of over by our, like, the other side of our training ground. So I'm cycling back, and I see these headlights over there. And I'm like, what the shit are they doing at now 12:30? And I'm like, they have no business being there. So I beetle over there, and like, I see this. These people scurry away, and they're driving past me the other way. So now I'm like, shit rats at the training ground, watch out for a black F-150. And I can, like, smell something burning. So I'm like, well, this isn't good. And it wasn't like somebody's, like, chimney, like, burning, like, keeping their house warm. It was probably some things that shouldn't have been burning. So, and I, like, got to the gate. The gate was locked. And by that time, I think you were, like, well, fucking them up. I'm coming down. So I rip around to the south side of the airport, and we have access on the south side as well. I'm like, hey, that's locked up, and you had already got to our north entrance. So we do go in. Which would be the opposite. Nice. So, and now all of a sudden Rob's like, well, shit, I'm up.
Yeah.
So now Rob's there too. So we go in, and it was no harm, no foul in the training grounds. Maybe some leftover activity from practice night.
Yeah.
But
then actually some other guy drives by really slow because he probably saw all the headlights over the training grounds at midnight. So the other just, like, just random civilian guy drives by looking at us and like,
no. We get the scene lighting on.
Scene lighting on the new truck.
It's pretty bright.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, nothing ended up happening, but
so Todd's end of the day.
Yeah, yeah, I like that end.
Where you go, Todd?
You're welcome. And then, like, another 25 minutes later, our pagers are like, batch text. He's like, "Are you guys?" Or maybe it was Rob. Like, one of you guys is like, "Is your guys' pagers make, you know, making noise?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's probably fucking Todd." He's like, "No, it's not me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry."
Find a week. You guys are a week too.
Yeah,
oh, man. Yeah.
Not to mention, I'm getting texts from one of your members and from a fellow firefighter, neighbor, his neighbor, who's a full time firefighter for the city of Burnaby.
Yeah.
Right. So he sends me a text to be a fellow jerk. Be like, hey, how's the view from the fire hall?
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's a lot of fuckery going on.
Yeah, I still like the burn back though. I was like, oh, thank God you were first on scene the other day. So Kevin beat Osuyas to a call.
Yeah,
grab the garden hose, put the fire out.
Bastard!
I'm like, oh, it must be nice to save more than a foundation. No disrespect to our fellow firefighters in the city. Yes, I was just really mad.
it was perfect. It was perfect.
It was great. I mean, that is some good, friendly fun.
Absolutely.
And we'll get your ass back.
I know you will. Absolutely. Yeah, so that was our night, Friday night. A lot of babysitting.
Yeah.
How about you guys? You guys get up today?
You know, other than some seminar prep, which is good. We got a lot of things prepped down at our training grounds for our seminar coming up. So we have 2.5 burn buildings. We have 3. One of them is not complete. But we have our original burn building up on sort of the upper level. And then we have a new one that we're making. And then our search burn building, which is like our second one that we built. And one of our firefighters, like, they had no idea. They're like, so, like, how much of this is, like, going down to the parks?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then they get down there, and Brett had already dismantled it. So our upper burn building is stationary. We've got port cement floor. Like, it's where it lives.
Yeah, we're not looking at it.
Yeah, where the other one is, like, Lego blocks, and we can come in there and crane all of our cans apart and make one massive building turn into, like, five fire and scenario-based space sessions. So he comes down there. He's like, holy shit. Like, we got cans spread out nicely everywhere. And he's asking, he's like, how many of these are we taking down? We're like, all of them. Like, holy shit, really? Oh, yeah, this all goes down. And, like, start saying, like, this is what's what. He's like, oh, that's really cool. So, yeah, like, a bunch of that prep work. And then Rob Grant, who've been on here before, and Brett, we're running through our rookies on Cold Start Livefire. So I kind of tag in and out of that and help get some things organized or whatever. And I think the main takeaway from that session is make sure your Tiger Torch works. Because the guys were in there messing around with the Tiger Torch, blew all the propane before we wanted them to light up the fire. And then we had to, like, send the chief back to get another bottle. Like, sorry, guys. Like, we're really good at putting fire out. Maybe not so good at starting it. But that went really well. I was chatting with the crew afterwards and just, you know, getting them inside the building, doing that cold start, watching the smoke layer, feeling that thermal layer, you know, really getting that first hands-on experience of how well our gear like actually protects us, getting that stress inoculation down. It's really, really good. And they were jacked. Like, they were super, super happy with it. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys did a really, a really awesome job of teaching them. It's one of my favorite sessions, and I was happy to be able to bounce back and forth and still be able to be a bit of a part of it, because like, watching how these rookies react to that, I think, is really telling of, like, how their progression will be, you know, moving forward. You can do SCBA training in the bays or, you know, out in the truck outside of a live fire environment, but getting them in there on air in SCBA, it's really telling, and everybody, like, was thriving to the moment. So they're really excited for the next live room.
I haven't been in that burn building for a while, so it was good to get back in there with the heat and everything, but I'm always amazed, too, with the temperatures we can get in there, but the fact that we had a pretty good smoke layer.
Yeah.
And, you know, just taking that glove off and still feeling that cool air down low, versus what's up here was still really cool. And then standing up and it really going pretty dark. I think the four of our new recruits were impressed by everything that they saw, they did. And just like you said, getting comfortable to your gear, what it can actually take. I'm not sure what we got up to. I think about 900.
It was just over 1,000. The hottest was just over 1,000 degrees.
Like in the
Obviously
not in there. Not where they were.
No. Yeah, like if you, like, we were down low. The hottest portion burning up in the fire room about 1,000 degrees.
Yeah. But that's why it's really impactful for the new recruits to learn that, you know, see that cold start and see the progression, watch the tick and see, like, this is how safe it is down here. This is how safe it is at this mid-level. This is how, you know, it's hotter, but, you know, and then seeing how it rolls and how the heat builds and with your thermal layers and just, like you said, having that, that mindset and learning how comfortable you can be. And did you guys do hold applications and vent as well during that one?
Yeah, pretty much venting.
So not a ton of venting.
A little bit of knockback.
I think Grant was on the nozzle. It was really cool for them to see as well how little water applications can change the dynamic of a fire that, like, is rocking directly in front of you. And then just a little bit of water app changes everything. We do have our small vent over top to kind of help with that rollover there. And we did get a small one. Grant wasn't very impressed with it, I guess. But, I mean, it's getting to be a pretty old can. Our, like, seal between the two cans is starting to, it's fucked. So you're not going to get the best simulated rollover there. But it sounds like they were very, very impressed by it. Like, seeing any sort of, you know, like, river of fire going over your head is pretty cool to see. And then, they opened up the back of the burn can, did some more water application. I think they got some of the rookies some quick hands-on, helped them put out the fire, which is good. So, I mean, it's just that whole layering thing that Scott always says, right? Being able to build that skill set and then getting them in there and building off of some of the hose handling techniques that they've been taught in the weeks past. And then, their next one's going to go a little deeper into the venting.
I think that's great, too, for retention of rookies as well, to layer it like that, because now they've got a little bit of that taste for what's going on inside and what we're actually doing, so that once we build up from that with the fire attack and ventilation and that, they start to get, you know, a little bit more excited about what it is we're doing.
Yeah, it helps them build up the basics of, hey, this is what's happening inside the can or the structure. And, you know, if we don't deal with it immediately, this is the other aspects of how we can deal with it. Like, well, that little bit of water application from the exterior, maybe that might be the move, depending on what's going on. But they can start piecing that together so much better.
Yeah.
Because and we see that even in our recruits, like, because unfortunately, we don't have a burn building, so we have to go out of town to do our live fire. So we build all these skills and as much knowledge as we can give them in other dry scenario stuff. But then when you actually get to the burn building, you know, talk to them afterwards, they're like, yes, I get it. And like, it paints that picture so much better for them.
Yeah.
So you're definitely a step up having three buildings.
Yeah.
Well, technically two burn cans and then the third is more of a smoke building.
Yeah.
It's just nice to be able to, okay, like you've been teaching them the past couple of weeks on water supplies and some hose stream and movement stuff, but to actually put some of that stuff now into the actual application of where it's effective.
Yeah, and depending on how this week goes, because we're obviously prepping for seminar, but I would still like to get them in on venting practice, because I think once you get to venting, you're kind of now you're understanding like kind of a good flow of the fire now. You know, you're understanding kind of, you know, you don't know everything obviously, and you're not going to go, you know, first truck to the structure fire now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You're getting more understanding of how venting works and how fire dynamics are and putting them in again into the live fire, into the burn building, and running some venting, like whether it's a positive pressure attack, probably combine some hydraulic ventilation, that's usually what we do. But just so they understand that, understand the importance of venting.
Yeah.
Because that's a tricky thing that, because when you first hear about it, you're like, interesting air. Well, I know the fire triangle, because they probably know the fire triangle by now. And if they, you know, hey, we're going to shove a bunch of air in there, like, what? This is why. So I think that'll be important to show
for our new recruits too. It'll be, you know, if we can get one more live fire in for them, it'll be unfortunate because they probably won't see live fire for a while after that. Because
actually, they will, because most of them are going to be helping doing
tower. Well, okay, after that, we won't be able to do any actual recruit training.
Yeah,
because summertime gets closer, and then we have to go through our wildland stuff.
Yeah, so I think we might do one more.
Thursday.
Yeah, we have enough time.
And realistically, the rest of the crew, like now that we've got those cans separated, and you know, we basically put the lead instructors in charge of making sure that their session is ready to rock. So everybody's armed with everything that they need, and the rest of, you know, the crew. I think we're going to do some hall cleanup here, and
mine needs very little. Like, so I can teach. Yeah. Mine. I'm basically prepped for it. So it's a shooter thing. So it's. Big blood and some
people,
some tourniquets, which I have, some people, So, I think that's what we'll do probably next week, Get some more sparring layering,
just some more layering for those guys, and some more prep for the rest of us. Right. That'll be good.
Well, we did get, like, for our fire training now, too, we did get ourselves a new training tool, which is our battle fogger.
Yes. Is
it battle frogger, whatever we called it?
It's not a frogger, it's a battle frogger. What did that? I was curious, I sat sitting over there. How did that thing run?
It runs like a hot damn.
Oh, yeah.
So Grant's like, let's go test this.
And did you do it upstairs? Upstairs,
yes. So in our fire station, which we're in now, there's a interior stairwell, which is right actually behind the camera. And then there's an exterior that you can get to from the outside, and it goes straight to the upstairs. So they thought, hey, let's see if we can smoke out the stairwell.
The stairwell.
So they went outside, opened up the outside door, and they aimed the fogger, if you will, into the stairwell. So I think a couple of moments passed, you guys were walking up the stairs, and it was like super smoky almost immediately, and then it filled the upstairs compartment and then started to come down this
side. Oh, really?
And then the smoke alarm went off, and we opened up the outside door, like the little hatch, as one of our members is driving by. And, like, I'm running out the front door just to have a look, but, like, he sees me bail out the front door. He slams on his brakes. He's like, what the shit? I'm like, let's go. He's like, I'm like, no. I'm just fucking with you. That's why it was, like, billowing out the upstairs.
That's why the upstairs door was left.
Yeah, well, I heard, yeah. Yeah. So the old Battle Fogger is a good
purchase.
It's a good purchase. All right. It
worked well. Okay, so we're back. Just had a little drop in internet activity here, which is how we are recording our...
Probably all that battle fog smoke you got up in the air.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, it definitely works out really well to be able to fill up that kind of a space.
Right.
And quickly, like, it was rapid succession as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like it was, like, over, like, 20 minutes. It was 5 minutes.
Because it doesn't shut... Grant was saying it doesn't shut off, like it'll keep going for, like, an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Straight continuous.
Yeah, like some of the small ones will like go for like a couple minutes and then shut off and go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this one just keep it's what they use for like movie sets. Like it's legit. So
cool. Yeah.
While we were doing this, Scott's like, we should go fire that baby.
Yeah, I want to see it now.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. Yeah, we purchased it for seminar and we were gonna definitely use it for training ground. Mm-hmm. It was actually we purchased that under our training section because
for our
new building for which was carcinogen. That's kind of that training where you want smoke, but you don't need to have fire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'd be good, especially in our new service building. That's like basically two stories, four big sea cans. And we had this kind of weirdo plan where we were going to smoke it out with it, basically a chimney down the middle. And mm-hmm. But that just, again, that limits the life of the can. Everyone has to wash their gear then, like mm-hmm. after every practice, because it's just. Still smelling
like
hay and all that kind of stuff.
Really nice. Fire. Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is going to be an awesome addition, especially for that new building and for our current one. So, use that in addition to live fire if you want to make sure that you're really smoking out the other side of the building or down on the lower one. We can smoke out the VIS side. It's awesome. So. We'll make sure to get lots of video of that at summer, which, why don't we kind of roll right into that.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we chat about seminar? I know we did an entire breakdown last podcast, but I think we should just mention it.
Yeah.
So I guess I will. Seminar May 5th, 6th, and 7th, Oliver, BC. Oliver Fire Department's obviously putting that on with many helpers from our mutual aid departments all the way up the valley, including other live fire and hands-on instructors. I think we're 20.
Sorry, I just thought mutual aid. The also in the news, our local brewery.
Yes.
Which is called the Fire Hall Brewery because it's based out of our old fire hall.
Mm-hmm.
They just won a bunch of awards for their... For three awards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For their... their mutual aid
blend.
It's a beer that was placed inside of a whiskey cask, which is run by our friend Grant, who was the Battle Fog purchaser. So he runs a distillery. So they combine these two, the beer and the whiskey cask, and I guess it was pretty good. I didn't have any. They sold out.
There's a bottle sitting at home. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It's based off their Holy Smoke Stout. Right. So it's a decent stout. And then I can't remember how many months it was in the cask, but picked up that flavor. And it's decent.
The reason why I bring it up is not because you're going to be able to drink that particular item, but they are actually going to have the night of our after party. They're going to have they're going to be at our after party.
Yeah.
And they're also going to have the after party at their brewery for anyone at the seminar to attend.
That's right. So if you want the party to keep going after 11:30,
head good luck in the morning.
Carol Bistro and make sure you report to Rob doing. What are you doing there, Rob?
Not for
me. Yeah. Report to me after you've been drinking hard. You can see me at Firefighter Challenge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we should have a separate award for running the thing hungover.
You only should get
the hungover
those portable breathalyzers that you can hook up to your phone. And if you are still blowing over in the next morning and you complete the challenge,
that sounds like a bad idea.
Then you get a high five and maybe some handshakes. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. So the entire idea, the entire event, just to kind of wrap that up, is Friday night check-in. We do a bit of a welcome party here. All day Saturday is all hands-on training. Many live fire events, AutoX, Active Shooter, Stop the Bleed. We've really expanded. I think we have like half a dozen new sessions this year, which is really, really cool. So we're really excited about that. And then we do have the party in the park after. Tanner Olson Band's coming to play. That is going to be opened up to everybody, all firefighters, all vendors, as well as the townsfolk. So we're hoping to have a really good show.
Say, I saw your poster today in the morning.
That's cool, right? Eh? Yeah.
It's got this big mushroom cloud, and it's very
it's like Green Day.
Yeah,
and
based on the Green Day.
Yeah,
Juki. Well, I knew you wanted to have that as our shirt, but yeah, I was like, yeah, let's get that in there.
So really, really cool. And then obviously Sunday for half a day, we're going to be doing the same thing. Maybe a little slower times on the Firefighter Challenge.
Yeah.
But we're really excited about that. Registration has closed. So as of...
I think we can actually put many more people
in. I think we're over capacity. We definitely made
it quite over. We're there.
Yeah, so. We are at. If one or two were to trickle in, by all means, we wouldn't say no. But the only saving grace is we did add a couple extra sessions. So we were able to keep those group sizes a little bit smaller, so you have more time hands-on per session. That's coming up May 5th, 6th, and 7th. Modus is coming. Why don't we chat about those guys? Todd?
Yeah, so Modus, claim to fame, is a snagger tool. And they make all sorts of awesome firefighter appliances. So they got wedges, mini spanners, other soft entry kits, bags, mask bags, pocket organizers, you name it. All the little accoutrement for all the little supplies.
Big word for the weekend.
Is that the right word?
But it's big, it's not right.
I'm going to say big words too. I don't mean anything.
Modus has been an awesome supporter of us, and we are of them as well. And they're going to be on a seminar in full force with a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So really look forward to having them. And you can check them out online on their website and use DTFF5. We'll get you 5% off your order.
Beautiful. Rolling into Manscaped, Scott.
Manscaped, your balls will thank you for it. That's actually what their shirt says.
Yes. You have a shirt.
Sometimes I wear that shirt under my uniform. I take my uniform shirt off and be like, what are you wearing? Because you don't have to wear a black shirt underneath it.
Yeah.
So, Manscaped, I think, already basically said their tagline.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, keeping the nether regions clean is important to prevent cancer and just funk. So they got the lawnmower. What are they at now? Lawnmower 2.0?
4.0.
Yeah, 4.0. The it's a weed whacker 2.0.
Yeah.
As well as a bunch of lotions and
crop mops.
Which are some wipes.
We're like,
The beard trimmer now as well.
How long is your beard? You started your belly button.
Oh, I could use for a thing.
Yeah. You know. I said that the other day, and someone was saying something when I was training about it. I said, oh, Manscaped DTFF 20 gets 40% off. And they're like, what? Okay. So, yeah, DTFF 20 gets 20% off for all their products and free shipping.
That's right.
Is it anywhere in the world? There's something behind that.
They didn't specify, but I assume.
Marshall Bass, if you're listening, order something and see if it's free shipping.
That's right.
If not, I apologize. Thanks. Yeah.
Nice. Rob, why don't you talk about Stop the Bleed?
Well, after you've done your manscaping, you may need to stop the bleed. Like Todd has always had three methods for stopping the bleed. You've got direct pressure, wound packing, and using a tourniquet.
Perfect.
So, and as always, you can visit
stopthebleed.org or .ca.
And there are resources, and these guys do some training as well in teaching the courses. And I had a great resource for everybody to know whether you're in the fire service, the police service, or EMS, or for teachers, or for
general country,
for anybody, you know, even the general public, it's a good thing to know. So, yeah, stop the bleed.
It's actually when I was training today, my other job, we were doing we're in a pistol range, and part of the safety briefing, we always talk about gun handling, safety, and all that stuff. And I said, okay, and they always designate a first aid attendant and all that stuff. And I said, okay, I have a question. What are the three methods of bleeding control? And they're like, what? I'm like, this is part of the safety brief from now on. Oh. So everybody got it.
Nice. But
yeah, they were like, oh, that's actually good. Mm-hmm. Remind them before it could happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. And then we got, you know, we already talked about it during our seminar spiel there, but Tanner Olsen Band.
Country music out of the West Coast of Canada. Yeah. What's that song, that Wheeler Walker song?
Yeah, Wheeler Walker Jr.
Yeah.
She's a country music fan.
Yeah. Anyways, that's not him. So Tanner Olsen, country music out of the West Coast of Canada. They are coming to the seminar, and they're touring around right now. Got some new songs out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's about it. Mm-hmm. Check them out on Spotify or wherever you listen to your music.
Yeah. And then we, all night, we've been drinking Wolf Tree Coffee, coming out with our Wolf Tree DTFF blend. Mm-hmm. Going to debut that at seminar, and then we'll be available for sale from that point following. I believe we have launched the name as the initial attack. So start your morning with the initial attack.
And because it's our first one.
That's right.
With them.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it's an awesome, you know, medium to dark roast blend. Yeah, very full flavor.
And we've discussed a little bit on a decaf one. Maybe you stood down. Is that what we're talking
about? Yeah.
We definitely asked some ideas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Todd, did it. Was that a ghastly call or just at your general work when you had like 20 different ideas for different
things? No, I was
working. Yeah, he was going. Some, was like, yeah, some of them are not so marketable. Yeah, some of them are definitely not
marketable. Like code 4.
Yeah.
Which, if yeah, we wouldn't have
that. Anyway, yeah, Wolf Tree, they're out of Oliver, BC here as well. It's awesome, Okanagan based coffee company. Really, really happy to partner up with them.
Yes.
So watch for a little bit more info on that. They are wolftreecoffee.com, and they're on the Facebooks and the Instagram, so check them out there. Give them a like and a follow. They do deliver anywhere in the southern Okanagan, and again, they will be available and on site at the seminar for pickup. So even if you can't attend the seminar, if you're in our area and you want to come check it out, even just as a guest, they will be in the vendor section, and you can pick some of their product up in the vendor area as well. Awesome. Yeah, and then lastly is us. We're here, and we're very, very thankful of everybody's support. You can find us on all of your social media platforms, your Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. As you're watching this, we are making a conscious effort to get more and more of our videos up on the YouTube. Yeah.
And our Facebook page has changed to Down to Fight Fire.
That's right.
So if you see us, there's two Facebook pages for a little while. Mm-hmm. The one you want to be on is the Down to Fight Fire one, which currently has our Moose logo, I believe.
Logo. That's right.
Our older Oranger logo, that's our podcast page. We're still doing a podcast. We'll continue the podcast, but we want to make it more of a DTFF.
It's more of a brand than a lifestyle. Yeah.
It's a DTFF lifestyle.
It is. Yeah, there's plans for the future more than just a podcast. So just kind of moving away from that, I think was kind of
not moving away from podcasts, moving away from
as the only marketable name.
I was gonna say we have a new shirt, but none of us are wearing it tonight.
That's true. Yeah, pretty wicked shirt.
Yeah, you can sell the San Diego shirt there if you want.
I
believe I also have a San Diego shirt.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah, beautiful. So again, give us a like, share, subscribe. Try to get over there and like our new Facebook page. We've been doing our best to try to help move all of our followers over. Give us a rating on your podcast platform. It just helps us get out in front of more and more people. And that's obviously what keeps, you know, driving us forward. So back to the Stop the Bleed thing. If you guys go on our YouTube, these two put on an amazing, basically the entire course. They walk you through, talk about those high fidelity sims, you know, making it lifelike, keeping people engaged. So that is on our YouTube as well. So go back and have a look at that, as well as just some older like tips and tricks, some hose handling and things like that. You'll be seeing a ton more video coming out this spring. Big thanks to our social media and our marketing team, which they happen to just be married to us. So there's big plans to get a lot more stuff out there for your viewing pleasure. Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll do some filming at the seminar.
Yeah. So Cass is going to spend the non-briefs out there doing some filming, bunch of live fire stuff, bunch of live training stuff. Modus is going to be on site as well doing a bunch of their filming. So a ton of video and photo stuff is going to be coming out of the seminar. So watch for that. Yeah. Any more for any more?
No, thank you. Have a good night.
Mm-hmm. Rob?
No, I got nothing else.
Beautiful. Scott?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. As always, stay safe. Stay GTFF.